good to see everybody. I'm back again this evening. We have several that are visiting. We're awfully glad to have y'all here with us tonight. It's always nice to have our visitors. I was looking out this morning, and I thought we probably had, I don't know, about 75 or so. And then when I saw on the board 91, I realized we didn't have enough communion cups prepared. So I appreciate those on the communion thinking fast on their feet. I don't know. I may just start preparing four cups, and that way we'll have 90 to 100 each time, but appreciate it's been nice to see everybody coming back, hadn't it? Hopefully we will be able to continue to do this and enjoy good health as we have. It's been a great blessing for that. I want to talk about something that had always kind of confused me when I was younger. I'm not saying that I know everything about this particular passage or this set of passages now, but I think I understand them a little bit more. And it starts in Mark chapter 11, if you would like to be turning over there. Mark chapter 11. Thinking about all the different challenges that we face in life. Some we bring on ourselves. Some come upon us. You think about addictions and people who are addicted to drugs and alcohol. Well, they brought that on themselves. They may have had encouragement in that area, but they certainly brought it upon themselves. People get certain types of situations that are difficult that they bring upon themselves. Other situations come upon us from time to time that we really don't have anything to do with. Either it's just happenstance, it's something that we just happen to get or whatever, or it's something that because of somebody else's sinful behavior we've had to deal with. You think of a drunk driver running into you and maybe suffering some kind of a crippling effect or something like that. But we all have different obstacles, different challenges of life that we go through. And how do you handle that? Well, I think these two passages really will help us with that. Mark chapter 11 and verse 22. Have faith in God, Jesus answered. I tell you the truth, if anyone says to this mountain, go throw yourself into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that what he says will happen, it will be done for him. Therefore, I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours. I always wondered about that. Why would Jesus tell us to pray, or that we could pray for a mountain to be moved and that God would move it? Would there be any circumstance that something like that would be of a benefit? I've never seen any mountains moved physically from where they stand into the sea. And so what is the circumstance with that? And then as I've gone through life more and more, I've realized that what Jesus was doing, or I realized what Jesus was doing, was just showing nothing is too difficult for God. He could, if it was beneficial upon our prayer, move a mountain from here into the sea. He's got that kind of power. But there are different kind of mountains in our life that to us are way, way bigger than a physical mountain. I mentioned some of them. If you've ever seen somebody go through the bondage of an addiction, that's a tough thing. Some of y'all have dealt with different physical ailments through the years, and you'd like a little relief from that just for a little bit, and you understand there's a mountain that I would like removed, and sometimes God will do that for us, and sometimes in His wisdom it's better for us to go through it. The point is, I don't think that Jesus is exaggerating here. I don't even think he's using hyperbole here. I think what he's doing, you can ask, she's not here today. I was going to say, ask Jessica what hyperbole is. I don't know, but I throw the word out. But there's Jessica. Good to see you, Jessica. Ask Jessica what hyperbole is, and she'll say, oh, he's just misusing the word. But I don't think Jesus is exaggerating here. I think what he's doing is he's just saying, look, this is the type of power that is at your request. And so whatever it is you're struggling with, God can handle it. But there is a condition to that. And Jesus pointed out, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you have received it and it will be yours. It wasn't James who brought this up first, that you can't ask for something and if you don't believe, you're not going to get it. It was Jesus that brought this up. There has to be a faith involved. And so we think, well, I can never have enough faith to do that. But now turn to Matthew chapter 17 and we're going to see something about the measure of faith that we need that can accomplish these things or can allow God to accomplish these things for us. This is after the disciples had tried to cast a demon out of a young man. It was certainly, or a boy, it was certainly something that was a worthy effort, something that you would have had no question that God would have wanted to have happened, and yet they couldn't do it. Even though they had been given power to cast out demons, they couldn't do it. And so they asked Jesus about it after Jesus was able to do it. The disciples came to Jesus in private and asked, "Why couldn't we drive it out?" He replied, "Because you have so little faith. I tell you the truth, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you." Have you ever had somebody in your life that you know they need Christ in their life, but you think they will never become a Christian? There is not any hope of them ever becoming a Christian, so why even try? Well, you don't even have faith as small as a mustard seed in that situation, because you are putting all of the burden upon yourself, upon your skills of persuasion or whatever type of respect that they may hold you in, and you're missing the point. All we have to do, and I'm missing the point, all we have to do is our best. We do have to have faith. And we do have to be praying to God for help. But if we do our part, God will take care of the rest. They still have a part to do, especially when we're talking about praying for somebody to come to Christ. They still have to make that decision, do they not? It has never been God's will that somebody come to Him and come to Christ that doesn't want to. As a matter of fact, this is something I think that we really need to have fixed in our mind. Because there are so many people that just kind of float through service to God. They don't particularly like it. Every worship service is something that is a burden to them. Every time they get up, it's a burden. Every time they sit down to read their Bible, it's something they just want to plow through. They'll pray when they need something, but it is just not a pleasant service. Is that what you would want in a relationship? Men, when you ask your wife to marry you, if you did, or women, what would you have thought if they said, "Oh, I guess. I don't really love you, but I'll do it. I don't guess I'll get any better offers." Wouldn't that just make you feel warm and fuzzy and just aglow? What makes us think that God looks upon a service that is begrudging, a service that's not even out of love, but maybe just out of the terror side of fear? The fear of God does involve a certain amount of terror, certainly, understanding that he can punish us, but it also involves love. It involves respect. It involves honoring His holiness. We are talking about a life here on earth that is essentially, if you want to boil it down to maybe even be oversimplistic, it's a test to see, do you want to serve God for all eternity? And if your decision is you cannot be bothered now, unless everything just lines up perfect, what makes you think that God wants you to be with Him for all eternity serving Him? This is just the test. This is just that little part. This is like a job interview. It's all we know, and so it seems really long, and it seems really difficult. And at times, when we talk about a test, it is difficult. But there has to be something within us that is moved to serve God because we love Him with all of our heart. Remember, that's His requirement. Thou shalt love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your strength. And you remember what Christ added when He was asked what's the greatest commandment? He added with all your mind and all your heart and with all your soul. This is something that God expected and demanded during the old dispensation. It is something that he expects and demands under the new dispensation. But it is not a difficult thing. When you fall in love with somebody, you really are in love with them. Of course you want to make the sacrifice to be with them and to have the time and to do things for them. When we talk about loving God, the creator of the universe, and having a privilege of being his servant, there is nothing like it. But this idea that somehow we can approach him in a begrudging fashion, oh, I guess I'll do it, you wouldn't want that with any type of a relationship. Why would we think that God would accept that? But now we come back to this idea. There are mountains in our lives. There's mountains of fear. There's mountains of worry. There's just all sorts of mountains that we have. And God has said to us, God has let us know that if we will just pray to him and just have faith as small as a grain of mustard seed, that he'll take care of the rest. We do our part and he'll do his. How different would your life be if you didn't have to worry? How different would your life be if you feared nothing but God? How different would all of our lives be if everybody around us was like that? Well, it would be heaven, wouldn't it? And oddly enough, that's what heaven is going to consist of. Those types of people, though we have struggled through life, though we've had our ups and downs, we've always come back to God on his terms. And though we don't deserve it, by his grace, we get to be with him someday. But again, we have our part to do. One of the things that I think is interesting is when we fail, when times get tough, and we excuse ourselves for that. Well, of course I failed God at that point. I was going through a difficult time. Here is a fact of life. It's easy to win. Some people still don't do it well, but it's easy to win. Not everybody's gracious, but it's easy to win. It's when you lose that things are hard. When you're at the peak of health, it's easier than it is when you are struggling with your health. When your family is treating you well, when your friends are treating you well, that's easy compared to when they are not. You think about the betrayals that Christ went through and some of the betrayals that the apostles went through and God's servants have gone through throughout the generations. How different would life be if you didn't have to fear these things? How different would our life be? But we don't. We go through difficulty sometimes and then we fail and we excuse ourselves. Here's what Solomon said through inspiration in Proverbs 24:10. If you falter in times of trouble, how small is your strength? We think that if we falter in times of trouble, well, that's just natural. It may be natural, but it's not acceptable. God wants us to be strong and, in fact, has given us and will give us all the strength that we need. But again, you go back to this premise. How different would our life be if we didn't have to fear that failure all the time or fear death? Wouldn't life be different? We are so often captured or kept captive, held captive by our fear of different things. Job said this, Job chapter 3. And by the way, when we look at Job, there is never a moment that we can feel superior to Job because of all the people in the history of the world, Job is the one that God permitted to go through this test. And I believe it was because Job was the one that was prepared for the test beyond anything that we ever could be. But Job, after all the things that happened to him, in chapter 3 and verse 25, he said, "What I feared has come upon me. What I dreaded has happened to me. I have no peace, no quietness. I have no rest, but only turmoil." I was self-employed for 13 years. Being in a farming community, most people are self-employed. And one of the things that all of you who have been self-employed understand is this. You always wonder if business is going to just shut off at some point. It's just kind of in the back of your mind. It's not that you live in fear of that all the time, but it's just kind of in the back of your mind. And if you're employed by somebody, you always kind of have that fear, especially if you've grown accustomed to paying your bills and eating and living with a roof over your head. You always have that little fear in the back of your mind of what if? What if this happens? If we enjoy good health, we have that fear of what happens if my health goes away. And Job, one of the most natural statements, what I feared has come upon me. And of course, when we look at what happened to Job, it was everything, including the loss of his children. It was a terrible thing. It was something that we couldn't, I don't believe, that we could go through and be very successful at going through. And maybe the hardest thing that happened with Job was even his wife turned away from God, at least for a time, and said, "Why don't you just curse God and die?" I just can't imagine getting to that point. But remember, she had lost everything, and then she had watched her husband, who she loved, go through this difficult health issue. We see people wanting to pull the plug all the time, not because there is no longer a body that is actually breathing anymore, it's just a machine, but because they just want somebody to be out of their misery instead of allowing God to take care of that. Well, this was something that even Job's wife had just had enough, and she was ready for Job's life to be ended and his suffering to be over. What I feared has come upon me. I suppose we all have different fears that just kind of lurk in the back of our mind. What would it be like if you didn't have to allow your life to be controlled by those fears? Proverbs 29, verse 25 talks about another type of a fear. Fear of man will prove to be a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is kept safe. I turn on the television now, and I see people that are doing some of the most outlandish things because they're afraid of what other people will do to them. I don't understand that. I understand what it's like to have threats. But I don't understand giving in to evil and just giving yourself over to evil because of that. And that's what the writer of this part of Proverbs points out. Fear of man will prove to be a snare. It's a trap. I want to say again, if you fear God, you don't have to fear anything else. We've talked about this a lot in the last, it's been one of the themes that I've tried to weave in to the lessons this year. But if you don't fear God, you have to fear everything, especially God, who you don't. It's one of those situations that whoever trusts in the Lord is kept safe. I just think that is one of the greatest gifts that we have. When you talk about moving a mountain, praying to God to move a mountain for you, I think about what Alice's grandson and wife have gone through this last few weeks, where their newborn had a hole in his heart and he had to be rushed into surgery, and his surgery's been okay so far, but they had to put him into a coma, a newborn. We all know that when there's something wrong with your child, you can't rest easy. And yet, God is in control. There are difficult times in life, and sometimes when we say all we can do is rely on God, that's true, but that's the best. When that's the only thing you got, isn't it nice at least that we've got the best thing? It's in your hands, God. But if you don't have those mountains of fear and worry, what a difference it makes in life. In Hebrews chapter 2, in verse 14, we are told what one of the greatest things, if not the greatest, that Christ did for us. Since it's related to the removal of our sins, I think you'd have to say that it certainly is tied for the greatest. Since the children have flesh and blood, Hebrews 2, verse 14. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, so that by his death he might destroy him who holds the power of death, that is, the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. I've got to tell you, there have been times in my life where I have not had a respect for death. You remember the 10-foot-tall and bulletproof years, perhaps, of your own life. I'm not talking about the lack of fear through stupidity. I'm talking about the gift that Jesus has given to those who are in Christ, where you don't have to fear death. When we first moved here, I was not used to going to the hospital every few days. Now, I can't do that right now, but I'm sure it'll come up again. But I'd go to the hospital, and here somebody would have cancer, and so I'd get all the symptoms of cancer. And then here somebody would have heart disease, and I'd have all the symptoms of heart disease. And here somebody was having contractions, and I wasn't quite sure I wasn't. You know, it's just one of those things. You just start thinking that you've got everything, and you start thinking about your mortality. And it took me a number of years to finally figure out, I'm planning on going to heaven anyway. I've talked about that a lot this year as well, and I really want that to be deep within our hearts, along with the understanding that we don't deserve to go to heaven. Those who plan to go to heaven out of some type of pride and thinking that they deserve it, there's something wrong with them, and they'll answer for that. I'm talking about this understanding that God has said, if you will do this, I will do this, and trusting God to keep His end of the bargain. And so when I know that heaven awaits me, if I'll just be faithful to Him because He is guaranteed to be faithful to me, then I don't worry about that anymore. Am I concerned about it? Of course I am. I've got kids. I've got grandkids. I would love to see my great-grandkids at some point. But if God decides to take me home and I get to go home with Him, what could be better? Isn't that why we live and exist in the first place? Of course we want to help our loved ones get there too. And of course we don't want to go a second too soon. But we don't want to go a second too late. When God is ready for us, we were planning on being with Him forever anyway. And what a difference it will make when you no longer have the physical worries and concerns that mankind are plagued with today. And once you get that mindset, Jesus came to free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. It changes everything. When our last child, Rebecca, was baptized into Christ, I cannot tell you what a relief that was for me. I felt like that we as parents had taken care of, and they had taken care of the most important thing that we had in our lives. Now, I realize they have to be faithful unto death, and I realize they could go away from Christ and they could be lost forever. But once they had become Christians, the relief that I had experienced from that is hard to explain, but it's palpable. I even didn't mind it when they drove with the coaches to the basketball deals and the track deals. And if you've ever been around a coach, they're the world's worst drivers. But I was at peace. I was at peace when Mom got to the point where it was time for her to get to go home. I was at peace when I got the phone call and heard that Dad had gone home. It's just one of those things, though we don't deserve it, this is what God has given to us. What is our life like when you no longer have to have these mountains of fear and worry and concern? Well, it becomes a type of a paradise on earth, the closest thing that we can experience to heaven. And that's what God desires for us. That's why Jesus came, in part, to take away our fear of death. That's one of the great things He did. And the last passage I want to share with you tonight is found in Matthew chapter 11, and it goes to our responsibility. Just saying that we can be free from fear and from worry and from all the difficult things in life does not mean that we still don't have our part to do. It's just a different type of thing. Jesus said in Matthew 11:28, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Get a picture of yourself carrying this mountain of whatever it is you've been carrying, and Jesus coming along and offering to trade you for this little backpack of responsibilities. This is my yoke. Would you be willing to trade for the mountain? And if we're wise, of course, our answer is, oh, yes. That's what God has to offer us. That's what Jesus has to offer us. And it makes everything in life different. It makes everything in life better. And hopefully it makes us, when we realize the great blessing that we've been given because of this hope, it makes us want to share that with others so that they can trade their mountain for the burden that is manageable that Christ has for us. something to think about, isn't it? I want to offer the invitation tonight. Maybe you've been carrying burdens that you've just been carrying too long, and you realize it's time to turn them over to God. If you're not a Christian, you've got burdens that you need to carry. If you're old enough to become and take on that responsibility, we would love to help you with that. It may be that you are a Christian and you've just been carrying it. You can take care of that between you and God. You can come back to God and go on that narrow path. You can go to Him on your own. But you can also ask for the prayers and the help of the congregation. If you have that need, won't you come forward and let us know? But if you do have any needs, won't you come forward and let us know while we stand and sing?